We'll start with Keith. Everybody.
Boy, that was. After all the coaching that I gave him on what to say about me, and he says, "And here's Keith." The first guy I sponsored, why I gave him all this coaching on what to say and not to say to his wife, and he went home and said, "Shape up or ship out, bitch." So that's how good. Anyway, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Keith.
Hey, Keith.
And I'm grateful to be here, and I'm grateful to be sober. My sobriety date's May 11th, 1976. And I'm really grateful that we can do this tonight. It's a special opportunity. Our daughter Simone is here visiting from Italy, and she's got over 36 years in the program, and my wife's got over 36 years in the program, over 108 years, the three of us. And it's an opportunity for the three of us to share family recovery. It's a shame we couldn't get to do it over at the East Side Church at the marriage weekend, but we'll have to settle for our little pork chop and haul. Stay humble. But I'm glad all you folks were willing to come and share. And I know that you hear Sue and I all the time, and you really came to hear Simone. And we'll give her the opportunity to share less, and she's got a couple of kids that are back there in the cage. They speak only Italian. Nicole's not bad. She can do a little English when she wants some. But Jasmine, when she wants some, she just rolls her eyes. But anyway, our house is full of life and love, and I'm very blessed man that my family came to the program the same time I did. We all came in pretty much at the same time and stayed. I had been trying to get sober in the program of whatever. I'll try this. Oh no, I'll try that. No, maybe I'll join this, and maybe I'll join that. Sue and Simone and I are members of the East Side Christian Church over there from back in the 60s when I got baptized drunk and had a whole mouth of Red Man chewing tobacco in my mouth. And when I came out of the holy water, all that chew tobacco come out in the water. That's when Simone said, "I'm not going down there with you anymore, Daddy. Look at my skin. It looks like I'm a prune." I was going down to get baptized every time they had a calling over there. And Sue said, "No, I was baptized back in Texas. I don't need to be baptized but once." And Simone was a little girl, and I'd make her go down there with me to get saved. And she didn't even need to be saved. Maybe that's why when I finally got here, that she had such a good relationship with her God, because he was shining her light on the light on her when she was being so patient with me. But anyway, I'm a raging alcoholic. I come from an alcoholic family, and my dad's an alcoholic, his dad was an alcoholic, his dad was an alcoholic, and his dad was an alcoholic, and that's about as far as I really needed to check it out. But the women were not alcoholic. The men were alcoholic. In my family, all the women worked. The men, some of the men worked too, but the women all worked, and I guess that's why I picked a woman that worked. I don't know, a little heritage there, but at any rate, I didn't court Sue in school or anything like that. I got out of the penitentiary and I went to a honky-tonk dance, and I started to fight, and the fight got out of hand, and I ran into a woman's restroom and to hide, and Sue was standing at the door, and I said, "Tell me whenever the fight's over." And I hid in the woman's restroom. And Priscilla, she came in and stuck her head in and said, "You can come out now. The fight's over." and I came out and the band was playing and she was handy, and I asked her for a dance, and I'm a quick study and one quick dance. I found out she had a driver's license, a car, money in the bank, place to stay, none of which did I have. I didn't have none of that. And since she had all that, why, I said, where you been all my life? And she said, where you been? And I said, well, I just got out of Huntsville Penitentiary. And she said, well, I just got out of an unwed mother's home. And I said, well, why don't we go together and give two people a break? And so we did. We started dating. And within a couple of weeks, the people in that community nicknamed us Hatchet and Hammer because we were fighting all the time. I found out later she finished the fight that I started. So that's a keeper. There was a lot of signs along the way that she was to be my soulmate. Everybody said it wouldn't work, so that's one good sign. If everybody says it won't work, well, there's an odd chance that it would, you know, and defy all odds. And secondly, why, we didn't have anybody else. We didn't have any other friends, you know, whatever. And her mother's house was the party house, which I liked that deal. So, you know, I was over there all the time, hanging around. And anyway, we just kind of had a little courtship there. And I'd get in trouble, and she'd get, you know, come and help me and get me out of trouble. You know, my parents were... you know, enablers, big enablers. Yeah. I was an only child. My mother was an only child. My dad was an only child. My mother died at childbirth. And so my mother's folks were big enablers, and they had lots of money. And my father's folks, they raised me because my dad went off to the Second World War and come home and, you know, was doing his thing. He was an alcoholic. I grew up with my father's mom and dad, and my grandfather there was an alcoholic. Each one of the alcoholics in my family was a different type of alcoholic. They all had various different types of behavior patterns, but all their character defects kind of, you know, dribbled down to me. I collected them. I got all the family's character defects, and little by little, we managed to come along and get pregnant and get married and then start down this path of recovery and headed for it. Sue lived with me, 15 years of my practicing alcoholism. She lived with me, and I was a violent drunk. It always went to that. If you know, you count 1, 2, 3, boom. Why, that's the way it went. And Simone was born, and Simone was brought right into that lifestyle. And I had some characteristics that I traveled around and various other things. And so there were many times it was just the three of us, and we were traveling, doing different deals, and trying to make money, trying to do things, Now, as a result, we ended up in California, and you know, I think that was necessary for me to come here in order to sober up, because I couldn't do it anywhere else. And we got here, and ultimately I tried a lot of different things. Like I said, church and various other things. I got in a lot of trouble, cost a lot of money, and one of the things that, you know, Sue always did was call my dad and said, send money. And he did, because he was an alcoholic, a guilty one with lots of money. And ultimately, you know, our life went down to where we lived in this beat-up old house and drove beat-up old car, and we all looked beat up, and we were beat up, and we were tore up, and we were sick and crazy. They were crazy. And Simone wore hair in her face and an old Raggedy Ann coat, and she was all torn up, and Sue was crazy, and I was loaded all the time, trying to figure something out, one thing from another, trying to figure out what was wrong. I didn't know what was wrong. I didn't know that I had a phenomenon of craving. I didn't know that I could stop, and I went to AA, I went to NA, I went to all kinds of various things, but it never happened until it happened. And when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And on May the 10th, 1976, a 12-step call was made by little Jack Callahan, and he 12-stepped our family, all three of us, and he took me and put me in a detox. Dr. Paul was the head of that detox, and it was perfect for us, because Dr. Paul read my book. Dr. Paul understood what kind of an alcoholic addict I was, and we started this road of recovery, and Dr. Paul and Max helped Sue and I and Simone get into the program of AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen. And from that point on to this, it's been over 36 years, and we haven't had any time off for good behavior, no sabbaticals, no vacations. We've been right in the trench. Simone moved to Italy and got married and started her life, but she's got girls she's sponsored over there. She went over there 27 years ago, and she's got girls she's sponsored over there for that long, and is active, and it's very important, very important. The program's very important in our lives, and I'm just I'm so privileged to be able to be here with my family. And it's obvious, it'll be obvious to you that we have forgiveness in our lives today. There is forgiveness, and I'm so grateful for the forgiveness that my family's given me. Thank you.
And now I'd like to present Sue.
Oh my God, she introduced me and left. They're secretaries in training. Hi, I'm Sue. Very grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups, because today I love an alcoholic. And the alcoholics in here wasn't true when I got here. I hated him, and like he said, I was always violent, always tried to kill him, and I haven't slapped him, kicked him, or stabbed him since May the 11th, 1976, and he's grateful for that. Simone's grateful that I have recovery. I haven't knocked her around since May the 11th, 1976. And there's two little girls back there in the babysitting room that haven't been knocked around ever. And it's all because the family chose recovery. And Keith shared with you a little bit about our story. I didn't come from an alcoholic home. I got here and I thought, you know, what's a lady like me doing in a place like this? I came from the oil fields in a trailer house, and I'm calling myself a lady. And we moved around everywhere, and we was called trash. And but I was arrogant, and I had a lot of false pride. And the one thing that I knew how to do was stick up for myself. And I carried that into the disease of alcoholism. And I remember, I was sophomore in high school. My dad had passed away, and my mom was dating. And she was had come home from a date one night, and I'd already gone to bed. And it was my younger brother, my older sister, had married and gone off and started her own family. But my brother, who's 7 years younger, and I were in that home, but we was both in bed asleep. And my mom came home from a date, and her date were sitting in the living room. And they were drinking coffee and talking, and I got up out of bed. I walked through the living room. I went to the kitchen. I got a butcher knife, and I turned around, and I walked back to my bedroom, and my mom followed me. Her date said, "Ooh, what's wrong with her?" And my mother says, "She sleepwalks." And so my mother walked with me, and I picked up my wastebasket, set it down, hit it with the knife, set it down, and took it back and put it in the drawer in the kitchen. I don't know where that came from. Never had I been like, but when I found Keith, I didn't sleepwalk anymore. I just went and got the knife. There was something in me before I ever met an alcoholic that knew what to do and how to take care of things and how to handle stuff. And you just blow your way through it. And when I got this program, it's like I wasn't afraid of nothing. And everybody said that. That's why I was so mean and violent. And when I did my inventory, what I got to find out is all of that anger came from fear. And the fear was, is I didn't know what to expect. I couldn't predict the unpredictable. I was afraid of the unknown. I had no faith. I had no God. And that's why I reacted that way, I believe, today through inventory work. And that carried through my life for the next 15 years. And when Keith finally reached out and there was a whole lot of violent stuff that happened, and cops had come to our house when we moved to California, and I would be crazier than a fruitcake, and drunks just, when a cop walks up, they just... No problem, officer. And I'm going, and they arrest me because I'm the crazy one and I haven't drank. Yeah, and I'm yelling and at the cops and stuff, and they're starting to jerk me around, and Keith smarts off at them, and they take the handcuffs off me and take him to jail. And so I get to go write a hot check and bail him out. Nobody ever taught me how to do that either. And I used to call his dad and say, I just wrote a hot check to bail Keith out of jail. He's just like you. So send me the money to cover that son of a gun. And he would. He would. And I knew how to handle the unacceptable. Because everything in our house was unacceptable. Yeah. And when Keith and I'd have those fights and he'd be done and he'd walk away from me, I'd turn around and take the rest of that out on Simone because she was there. And I know today that alcoholism is a family disease. But when Keith hit his bottom and he reached out to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had hit a bottom and I'd walked away. And when Simone and I went back to the house and he asked for help, I was given the strength from my God to say, no. No, I can't help you. If you want help, you help yourself, because I'd enabled him for years. And when I said no to that man, he reached out for the final time to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for that. He had no other place to go. And but once I said, no, I can't help you, one of the things, the gratitude, biggest gratitude in my life today, is that on any given day today, when I don't think it's a good day, I can look back over our life, and it has never gotten as bad as it was before we got here. I am so grateful that I got to go through the disease of alcoholism with Keith. Because my gratitude for his sobriety is untouchable. As long as there's physical sobriety in our home, there's hope. And I will not do anything to pull him away from Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I used to fight with him and all kinds of stuff because I wanted to be number one in his life. And when he got to AA, he told me, I can't hit you or do anything like that to you anymore. You got to fix yourself. My sobriety comes first. When he said that to me, I went crazy because I'd started all those fights and everything because I could get 100% of his attention then. Now he's sober and he's saying, fix yourself. I'm not going to react to you anymore. And that's what got me to looking at me and being serious about recovering. And we made Simone go to Alateen, and her and I did not get along at all. Today we can share a bottle of shampoo. That was not the case when we got here. I mean, we used to fight about being out of shampoo all the time, hairspray, all that kind of stuff. And my sponsor said, why don't you buy two? I never thought of that. Because I used to buy sodas and stuff and put it in the refrigerator and it'd be gone. And I wouldn't have anything when I wanted one. So I would write, Mom, on whether it was a wine bottle, a beer bottle, a Coca-Cola bottle, whatever it was, I would write Mom on it and put it in the refrigerator because that's mine. You can drink everything else, but don't drink mine. And I get home and be gone. I go, can't you read? And Keith would go, oh, I thought that said wow. I mean, they read the chapter in the big book a while ago, and it says, we are not a glum lot. And we're not. You know, thank God, like it says in the big book, we can laugh at the things we used to cry about. We was in Washington a few weeks ago doing a couples retreat, and this guy who was a newcomer raised his hand. He said, I have a question for Keith. And he said, okay. He said, when do you stop being an asshole? Keith goes, what time is it? And I said, listen, I'll tell you something. I said, for all the Al-Anons in here, patience and tolerance will work. Even a toilet can handle one asshole at a time. And that's the way we keep it light today. You know, it's there isn't anything in our life today that is a disaster. Not one thing. There's life that has tested us. And if we've got a program, everything is possible. For the newcomers in here, don't make a list of what you want today. You'll have to tear it up and throw it away in the future because your values will change and the things that are important to you today will no longer be on that list if you stay here 3 or 4 years from now. Because our wants and our needs come together in these meetings and in our lives. The key is that it doesn't matter if you're nice in here right now. What do you do at home? What do you do at home? How do you treat each other at home? And I was told to treat my family like I would a newcomer, with all the kindness, patience, and tolerance of a newcomer. And they said, the woman sets the pace in the home. I hated that because I did not want any responsibilities. I was done with responsibilities. I was always responsible for everything. Keith called me one time and said, hide all the cash, the feds are coming. So I put all the money in the laundry. I put it in the dryer. And he goes, what did you put it there for? I mean, the feds didn't come that time at all. And he said, where's my money? I said, it's in the dryer. And he said, why? I said, if you're going to launder money, I'll put it in the laundry. You know? And it's like, okay. You know, I knew how to deal with stuff like that. I didn't get any training. I was taught to stick up for myself. And when I got to this program, I reached out for a God. Al-Anon does not make us nice. Al-Anon introduces us to a God of our own understanding and to principles to live by, to apply to our daily living, so we have the strength to stand up to people that want to say, oh, come do this with me. And I have the strength today to say, I don't think so. Do whatever you have to do, but I ain't going there with you. You can go to hell or you can work a program. If you want to work a program, call me. If you want to go to hell, sayonara. I've already been there. I'm not going to go there twice. The hardest part about working my program was with Simone. We had to work one heck of a program. Yeah, and her and I was, yesterday morning we got up, we were reading our books in the kitchen. And Nicole got up and she came in there and she sat there in the kitchen with us and Jasmine was in the other room. And Simone and I were going to say our prayers. And I asked Simone, I said, do you think Nicole and Jasmine would want to do that? And she goes, sure. And so she's told Nicole, you want to say prayers. And Nicole said, our Father. We said, okay. And she hollered at Jasmine. And Jasmine came in there. We stood there in the kitchen and we held hands and we prayed. The two little girls said the Our Father in Italian. And Simone and I said the Our Father in English. And it got through and the little girls go, Father, Son, the Holy Ghost. Amen. they have teachings in their lives. And Simone said the other day, Nicole had asked her about... Pappy listens to music really loud. Simone said he always has. Why? Simone said, I don't know. She said, but he used to listen to that loud, and when he was drinking, when I was a little girl like you, the more he drank, the louder the music got. But the music's not as loud as it used to be. And Pappy doesn't drink anymore. And Nicole said, when we go to the beach in the summer, there's kids that drink. And she said, but I don't. I said, no. And Simone said, that's good. She said, I said no because I'm afraid I might like it. And that is the case with everybody sitting in this room. That is the case with every one of our children. The reason we bring our families to this program is so they know they have choices. The reason we work a program in our home is so people in our families know they have choices. If we don't pass anything else along, pass on to your children that they have choices. And don't let them fall down just because we're idiots. Give them the example of your recovery. That's what we have to do every day. And it's like a couple of gals from Las Vegas are here, and we had Bubbles share here a couple of weeks ago, and I'd taken her tape over there and given them to her, and those girls have been listening to that tape like crazy. And I told two of the girls here tonight, see that lady in pink? That's the lady you've been listening to her tape. That's the kind of recovery Keith and I had when we were new. That's the kind of recovery we heard all the time when we were new. We didn't hear, oh, I can't do it that way. If you can't do it that way, you're not in AA, Al-Anon, or Alateen. You're in your way. And you're not in God's will. And I don't even know why you waste your time coming here. And so one of the things that I love and appreciate in my life and my program today is that my God loves my whole family. It's not a one-sided deal. And there isn't anything we can't tell each other. We are open and honest with each other no matter what. And it's a blessing. And so, and the other joy in my life is to hear my daughter share the kind of strength in this program that she has. I love you. Thank you for supporting our family, and I'm going to turn it over to Simone.
I just want to thank Sue and Keith, and with that, I'd like to call up Simone.
Yeah, can I? Hi, my name's Simone. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Oh, God. I'm not going to drink that from a bottle. I mean, come on. Sorry. excuse me. I just didn't feel comfortable. God, it's such an honor to be here, and God is so, once I surrender, God just keeps taking care of me, and takes care of my kids, and takes care of the whole family, and I always have had conditions on, thank you, thank you. On me coming out, and the girls back home, the Al-Anon girls back home, have always said, "How about if we invite your mom to our roundup?" And I always tell them, "No, don't do that because I want to come out on Easter, and you ruin it for me. Because if she comes out, then me and my husband will get into a discussion on she came out, so why do you have to go?" And I always had this condition for the last couple of years. And I talked to my dad about coming out. He talked to me about coming out, and we had talked about it. And the girl said, how about if we invite your mom? They're deaf. I don't know, you know. So I said something to my mom, and my dad said, sure, why not? What's the problem? And I told the girls, and they just jumped for joy that she could come out. And then I told my husband, we talked about me coming out with the girls. And then about 10 days before my mom came out, I said, oh, my mom's coming out. I keep a deadline. When I got to talk about things, I have a deadline to respect because I'm a procrastinator. And if I don't have deadlines, I'll tell you the day before, the day of, the afternoon of. It doesn't matter, you know. And I thought 10 days will give us time to get everything situated in the house with a new bed and everything. And I said, my mom's coming out. And he said, oh, yeah, and it's February, snowing, and it's cold. And he said, now? And I said, yeah, because the girls invited her for the roundup. And he said, oh, okay. And so she came out. And so I've always, last couple years, have put conditions on this. And this year, I got to see my mom, and she got to come out and support my women's roundup. And I got to come out less than a month later. You know, God has no conditions, no conditions whatsoever. It's me who says that's not possible, you know. And God's will, I mean, you gotta, God's will, he has his divine way. But I put conditions on and don't even try for it. Whereas this year, amazing. To have her come out and then me come out. That's amazing. When I came to Alateen, I had on an orange coat that was like a pukey, vomity color coat by the time I got there. I didn't buy it like that. I mean, it wasn't in or anything. It was one of those fake fur coats, and it was orange. But I never took it off. And whether it be hot, cold, whatever, I always had that coat on. By the time I got to Alateen, they asked me, how do you feel? Because I wouldn't talk. Say something and just say what your feelings are. And I was 13, and I said, I don't know. And they said, come on, you know, do you feel sad? Do you feel mad? Do you feel happy? Do you feel joyous? What do you feel? And I said, I feel numb. And it took me a long time to get over that numbness feeling. I no longer felt, because I was right there. The other day when I told Nicole about the music, we were talking and my dad drinking and stuff, and she said, where were you? And I said, I was right there. I was right there. And I was right in the middle. And so after a while, alcoholism, the damage of alcoholism, the effects of alcoholism, I just, to deal, to sopravvivere, live, no, God, come on, go. Survive, who said that? You won, okay, got a point. to survive it, I couldn't feel anymore, because anytime there was a wonderful day, holidays, Easter, God, that was terrible, Easter, Christmas, wonderful times, joyful, religious, whatever, I knew the bad was coming. The bad was always going to mess it up, big time. Cops, fights, knock down, drag out fights, all that stuff. And so I just learned to deal with that and surviving that by just not feeling anymore. Because it was like being robbed. That ugly moment robbed me of the wonderful feelings. And so I just got numb. And that stayed with me for a long time. Till finally, in Alateen one night, I said something about an Alateen old-timer. And I said, I have something to say. And they're like, wow, yeah, she's going to talk. And I said, I don't like you. He looked kind of shady, like some of you guys. And I, they had been over at our house many times. And a lot of times the cops were over there because of you guys, him, getting together, you know. And then you'd leave and leave him. You wouldn't take him away. So those shady characters always left, but they would not take him. And so the cops had to take him. And my mom was like always a magnet with my dad. She'd have him, take him away, and then we'd go to a hotel right next to the prison, the jail. I mean, where's some sense, you know? Put him in and then try to get him out. But you want to see him behind bars. I remember once we were standing in line to see him in jail, and she had already paid for bail, and we're standing in line for hours with all the other families. And finally we get to the window, and they said, no, he's been processed, put in process or whatever. And it was like... And what a letdown for her. And I was like, God, you just get numb living all that, you know. And it's no longer emotional roller coaster. It's no roller coaster. It's just numb. Just go zombie. And I had no idea what self-worth was. I tried to look as much invisible as I could, which actually means you could see me a mile away. Just beat down. My mom, if she'd do something like that, I would duck, and she'd say, a dodging dog needs a blow, bam, and I get it. I have to be careful with that, because that can come out with me, with my girl. And there was a period there that we were fighting a lot, and I'd slap her on the arm or something, and I would go like that, and she'd judge, and that was an alarm for me, that I cannot do what my mom did, because I know what the damage means. I know what relationship we had, and that's with no alcoholism as far as alcohol drinking around us. It's the effects of alcoholism. I always thought of myself as a victim in the family until I did a fourth and fifth step where it came out. We had a cat. Dogs didn't do very well in active alcoholism, but cats are good survivors usually. And I had a cat that my dad would take out the alcoholism with him, her, and they beat each other up, and then my mom on me, and I had that cat. I would just do mean things to that cat. I'd put her in the dryer and tumble her and then take her out, and she'd grab on, she'd cling on, and I would love that. And I'd cry and have guilt afterwards over that and just do the same thing. I mean, alcoholism just ran down the hill. And when I did a fourth and fifth step, when I got to that, because I didn't remember that part, and when I got to a fourth and fifth, I started crying. And my sponsor said, why are you crying so much about this cat? And I said, what kind of mom am I going to be if I do that with a cat? Can I be a mom? So I kept going to Alateen. I got involved. I started getting involved with service. We started talking as a family a lot more. And Alateen helped me to take that coat off, helped me to get some self-worth and to find out what feelings are and how they feel. And also have desires. Take some confusion out and have some ideas of what I'd like to be when I grew up. And there was some ideas, and to work on that and get a direction. So I started having ideas of what I'd wanted to do. I said I'd like to be a model. Maybe I could do that, which is just to think about that and not be ashamed to think about that was a lot for me. And the Alateens were very supportive about that. And the AAs and Al-Anons were very supportive because I grew up in the middle of Alano clubs, a lot of AAs and Al-Anons, and sponsors of my folks were like my grandparents, because I didn't have much of a relationship with them. So I would adopt them. I was always adopting people. So they all supported that and said, you can do that. you could go be a model. And so my mom and I got informed, and we started working about that and stuff, and did the whole process and everything. Finally, the last deal after Japan, I decided, I thought I was done. And I've learned with God in my life and with program and having this house clean on the inside, this home clean on the inside, that I can have intuition, hunches that can I can follow and trust. Need to always talk about it with a sponsor, but there has been times where I have had a lot of pride fighting with either my husband or my daughter, and have a voice from the inside, and it comes from my gut, and it says, turn around and hug her, or turn around and hug him. And I'll fight with it too and say, no, I don't want to do that. No, you turn around and you hug him, or you hug her. And I have followed through on that. And so I had this feeling, I had this hunch, I had this intuition, you said, is that right? And to go to Italy. And people would say, oh, you're going to Italy, Malo. And I say, I think so. I think that's what I'm going to go there for. And the idea, that's what the ticket got me there for, was to go and model. And I got there, and I met immediately one of the girls that I sponsor still today, and we started going to meetings together, and the Italians are really funny, and sometimes I was the topic of the meeting. That would just get me so upset, and they always have candies on the table during the meetings and chocolates and stuff. And all of a sudden they start talking about what I had said, and it would become the topic, and I couldn't understand what Italian meant, but I read faces, and they'd be mad, or they seemed like they were really judging me and stuff, and I'd have chocolate. I wanted to eat a chocolate. It would just dissolve in my hands because I was talking about a higher power, or I was talking about a fourth step, and they didn't want to hear about that. They liked the first and the 12th. And they've grown a lot. And it's kind of funny because they have the same time in Italy as I do. And so it's grown. But going with Christiana to meetings, I would say, man, you're sick. And I'd tell her, say that. You know, we don't talk like that anymore, but we used to. And she would say, you can say that, but I can't say that. I'm Italian. They'll jump all over me. And I said, man, look at you. You need help, you know. And so we'd start talking about the fourth step, the fifth step, and we started up a 12-step meeting, a 12 and 12 meeting. And they took us to the district and said that we were weird. And in the meantime, I was helped translating Italian English literature to Italian. And they would always, the old-timer Al-Anon guys would always pun me about being kind of sensitive or whatever, and because they're always making fun of me. And I had found out, I had read in one of the suggestions of a meeting, and they had that pamphlet, Suggestions to a Meeting, and it was written, Suggestions to a Meeting to Lead on the Steps or Traditions. And I looked in the Italian pamphlet, and it wasn't there. And I said, ah, hey, look at this. You Italians take what you like and leave the rest, even with the literature, huh? Oh, no, that was a mistake. Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. And they got all hot and bothered. And I said, you guys are so sensitive, you know. You just wait. You got your moment to, you know. And so we've been growing, and more girls came, and our group started growing. Chain of sponsorship has grown a lot. That at the General Service Office, one of the girls, the secretary, after 20 years of having a secretary there that never wanted to leave, finally she went into retirement. And different girls that I sponsor went to apply for the job. And they didn't get it because they come from 12 and 12. In the meantime, Christiana sponsors a girl, and she said, I think I'm going to go for the interview. And we told her, don't tell where you go to meetings, because that'll X you out. And so she didn't, and they didn't ask. I go to Milan, you know, and she got the job. She got the job. She works at General Service office meeting, and then she told them where she goes to the meetings after she did all of her paperwork, so that's really amazing for the growth we've came from, and that they didn't like us, and they're in a lot of surface work and stuff, and the thing is that the last couple of years, if it wasn't for my sponsees, I don't know where I would be. And when my mom came out, we have a noon meeting at a little restaurant, and I haven't heard from a girl in a while, and I called her up, and she's very nice and sweet, and I said, listen, my mom's in, why don't you come out? Her dad just died of active alcoholism, and she was very angry with God and Al-Anon, and I said, why don't you come? And she said, okay. And she's like my chronic newcomer, because she's a periodic. And so she came, and we got to have another girl came, and my mom met Katie, had a little girl named Andrea, and now she's a big girl, and she got to see her and stuff. And the girls that I sponsor carry me a lot. And still today, and I'm always in debt, and they know everything about me, and they still love me, no matter what. And one night, Nicole's room was really, really bad, and it had a lot of clothes from when she was like six, and you've seen her, she's a giant, and so there was a lot of backup clothes and stuff, and we fight about everything, and it gets ugly. And so I asked the girls to if they could come, and they came in like four or five, and I always call them my angels. And another girl came that's in the chain of sponsorship, and is sometimes, and I come from a very sloppy bedroom with my mom, and it was very ugly with her and I about my bedroom also. I mean, there was, yeah. So with Nicole, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do like what my mom did with me during those days. And so I called for help. Now, it doesn't sound like it would be hard, you know. Even Disneyland, we went to Disneyland yesterday. If I was there with just the two girls, it would have been chaotic. It wouldn't have been always fun. Because one's off, the other one's bitching because the other one's over there, they fight. But with another member and her kids, it was a lot lighter, you know. And we got to laugh and got to be ourselves. And have fun, and not focus on the negative. And anyway, so that night they started helping me. We got trash bags out and stuff. And at one point, I opened up the last closet door, and there was just again huge ton of clothes. And I just went down on the floor and I said, "I can't do it. I'm tired. I can't do it." And every now and again, Christiana would take Nicole out, and I said, "I'm overwhelmed. It's not done. And one of the girls started throwing out, well, do you like this? Do you like that? And they just picked me up, and they said, you're going to finish this. And just started separating things. It wasn't a dramatic thing, but man, it was overwhelming to me. And it could have been very ugly if we were by ourselves, and we wouldn't have gotten as far as we did. We did the whole room. And so the girls just 12-step me on how to keep things orderly with me and my daughter, physically, mentally, and spiritually. And we finished it all. And I would go into that room, and I'd open up the closets and just go, wow. And I tell you, I believe there was a white light that would come out of there. It was very spiritual. And one of the girl that was there from another, that was another sponsee from another girl, called me and said, I saw angels last night. I saw angels at work. And they were 12-stepping me. And, you know, seemingly normal things can be ugly. And that's why I keep going to Al-Anon. It's because my isms, my effects of alcoholism, my teachings before the first 13 years of my life can still come out. And it never should be underestimated in me. I don't want it. The same way with the sobriety that my dad has. Every now and again, I call him up and say, thanks, Dad, for your sobriety. I don't live with him anymore. I live across the other side of the world. But I know that that could be terrible if he drank. The same with my mom. She's an Al-Anon. She doesn't drink. If she stopped going to Al-Anon, we could not have a relationship. And the same for me. We could not. It takes a minute for her and I to just start batting. One of the things, being a mom, I'm trying to do as a daughter is to be more considerate. I don't know if she knows that. But since I'd like my daughters to be more considerate for me, so I'm trying to be more considerate for her, to her. And do you feel that? Okay. Because when I came to Alateen, just as most kids from an alcoholic family had more resentments and hatred towards the non-alcoholic than they did towards the alcoholic. And that was the way it was for me. One of the reasons is because he was drunk. So that kind of justifies how he was. At the same time, when I saw my mom, after she'd been beaten up, tell my dad to get down on his knees and say he was sorry, I hated her for that because she took dignity out of my dad, not looking at what he just did to her. So that's the disease, my disease, not seeing anything, clarity. No clarity, no dignity. Alcoholism, as we all know, takes all dignity out of anyone. But I can tell you, the effects of alcoholism take dignity out of a person. It's not just them. And that's why I keep coming back. Because it's not just them. I can become just as crazy all across the other side of the world. My husband is similar to my dad in certain things. He doesn't drink, but he has that certain kind of character. And once, years ago, when Nicole was little, I started in on him. And he started back, and we almost got to where they used to go. And that scared me because I thought, God, there's no alcohol. And I pushed him and called him a Talibani. And you know who they are? No? Talibani? Bin Laden. And he didn't like that. And and pans started flying. And my daughter, I think she was 3 or 4, it took her years to forget that. She'd refer to that moment. And it just happened once. And those times, even times like now, are priceless because they remind me that I can go down there with just insanity. And that I definitely need a God in my life and this program, the tools of this program, to keep house cleaning. So the effects of alcoholism, one of the things I like in 12 and 12 AA, I think it is, that it says the more we work on something like, the more we work on recovery, the less we need our defects of character. And There is a need. I remember in self-pity, I used to like to get down into that self-pity of laziness, sloth, and there was a satisfying, ugly, but you're arrived. Ugly. I don't like that anymore. It's not my nature to not be lazy. I can still be lazy, I can still be slothful, but I don't like it. And so I try to work on it. And I don't feel comfortable living like that anymore. And so I try to give myself deadlines and to take care of business. One day a girl called me up, and I had just heard two whiners. And she called me up, and she said, you know, I sponsored this girl, and she started judging me. And I thought, God, she's right, and oh, maybe she's right, and blah, blah, blah. And so I started thinking of you, my sponsor, and that you always interrupt me when I'm talking about the problem, and the problem's always the same. And so I thought I'd tell you, since she told me, I'll tell you. And I said, sorry, that's not how I work. I interrupt you because you continually talk about the same problem over and over. She's not new. She has 14 years. She had 12 at the time. The reason that I interrupt is because we're done with that. If it keeps coming up, you say the same stuff's coming up. Let's talk about the solution until it gets in. But I'm not going to sit there and say, poor baby, or hey. So either you, and this is where the shoulders came in, either you, I'm Simone Drum. People who call me have large shoulders, and they want to hear it. So either you want to hear it, or you get, she had moved to the lake, and I said, you get an old lady at the lake. And that pats you on the head and says everything's going to be okay, and you're right. But I'm not going to do that. I was yelling at her in the car, and a couple of times I said, I am sorry on the how, the way that I'm saying this. But the concepts of what I'm saying, the principles that I'm saying, is exactly how I feel. And I make amends on how I'm saying it right now. But if you don't want to have big shoulders, you got to go. And we don't waste time. And usually I'm doing two or three things at the same time. So either driving and there's no kids, or I'm driving, there's kids, and we're talking. And so the deal is that big shoulders to me mean a lot, because when I came here, I was hunkered down. And I had shame. I had embarrassment. I couldn't look anybody in the eye. Today, I was telling the girls the other night, at Thursday night, something happened on the plane when we were coming over. It wasn't overbooked, but it was full. And they wasn't able to put me and my girls together. So I've learned that I got to grow up. And that I'm the mom, and I got to be mature and responsible, which doesn't mean to be a bitch. It means to ask and say how we're going to solve this problem. Through communicating, talking with my sponsor, talking with newcomers, doing service helps me to learn how to be mature and responsible. And I asked the lady, there's a problem here. And she said, okay, go to your seat and see if you can move. So that seemed like cinch. So I did, and the guy said, oh man, I just bumped up because I hate the back. I'm like way back there. I hate the back. But if we can't find anybody, I'm willing to do that. And so we asked another guy that came next to this seat, and he said, and he was a big guy, and he said, I can't because I got long legs, and I asked for this seat especially. So we asked another girl, and she says, I have leg issues. And so the guy, I look at the guy, and I said, I don't know. And he said, I'll go back. I'm willing to do that. You're a mom. You got to stay with your kids. And I said, God, after 2 hours, you'll probably want to go back anyways. But and he said, no, I'll go back. And I said, you'll get points. And he went, what? Maybe he was thinking of 1,000 miles or whatever. And I said, you'll get points for this. And he looked at me and he said, I'll take them. And for me, points, now I don't think God's taken track. But if I'm more of a good person than I am a bad person, I know that's going to help me. in the end. And it's going to help me today. And I looked him in the eye and I said, thank you very much. We did the whole trip. There was a couple of times I wanted to go back there and ask him if he wanted to move up. And but in the end, I went up to him at the baggage claim and I said, thanks again. I heard you didn't have a good flight because I met a relative and asked him how the flight go, thinking that. And I've taught my children, we pray for people. And they're Italians, they have... which not everybody has, I guess, but Angele Custode, Guardian Angel. And so we did a Guardian Angel on the guy prayer. And it, I don't know, it could have been worse maybe, I don't know, but he had a bad flight. And so I went up to him and I shook his hand and I said, thank you very much for moving. I heard you didn't have a good flight. And he said, that's not your fault. You're not responsible for that. And I said, I am. I'm 41K, which is the seat that he went to. Now, I'm not responsible for the assholes around him, but it wasn't for me. He wouldn't have had to gone back to the assholes around him. So I took my responsibility of that part. And I said, I appreciate that. I'm grateful. And I looked him in the eye and I squeezed his hand. Now, I learned that here and took it out with me. And try to carry that message of God in my life to the others. And the hardest part is to do that with my 14-year-old teenager. And I'm working on that. And I know that's a process. And not react to her. She's a good kid, but she knows how to work her mom, and she knows how to roll her eyes at me and stuff, and I do the lion on her. And the lion thing, as far as I'm talking, have you ever seen a lion when you go up to the cage? Well, they're usually doped out. But like in movies, you know, where they come up and go... like that. Now that's how I can do that to my daughter. And I had shared this morning about her criticizing one of my sponsees. But I didn't tell you, I don't think. I finished that. I went on her like a lion. And she hit the wall. She went back on the wall because I was on top of her. Because it's a life and death situation for me. And I said, if you once verbally criticize those girls... it's unforgivable because they helped me stay here. If I didn't have them, I couldn't stay here. And they love you very much and they accept you as you are and they accept me as I am. So you will not verbally criticize them to me. Only respect. Because they're like her aunts. And I walked away. And because I have a sponsee that her daughter criticizes the program people, and she allows that. That's not a given. That's not, you just don't do that. And and I've worked with that also with my husband. I don't want to hear it, and I won't accept it from my daughter. And so I walked away and I started doing things, getting ready. And she came up to me and she said, "You're right, Mom. I'm sorry." And I know that time. She knew what I meant. And it wasn't one of our merry-go-rounds. It wasn't one of our discussions or fights. That was a deal. That was a principle that even my daughter has to understand at least that part. There's respect. And when she said, "I'm sorry," I know that was a sincere sorry. And she knows that all of you and all of them love her. And she's so funny. She came here 3 years ago, and all the things that she did 3 years ago, she hadn't made last time we were here, because Jasmine was sick and she was three. So me and Jasmine, the California part of the trip, were pretty much home-based. So she got to go out with my folks and with Julia and go over to Chris's. And she just had movies and she just had a heyday. We didn't do Disneyland, but every time her by herself was like a Disneyland, you know. And So, and she loves you guys. She loves America. And so she's been remembering all of her things. You know, can we go over to Chris's place? And I'm saying, no, I think it's over at the other, where the other hall was and stuff. And she said, oh, no, I think it's here. And I said, no, what I know. And so she went with Chris over to his place. And I mean, she's working, yeah. And Jasmine came back with a little toy. I mean, they feel so comfortable with you guys. And you guys are miracles if they can feel comfortable with you. I mean, they feel your love. They feel your assets. They don't know about your defects of character. They don't know about your past. But they feel your assets and your God in your life. They feel that. Now, any of us, anytime, can take that home, to work, whatever, on the road. We can give that and be good people and get points. And whatever that means, whatever. My higher power doesn't take points, but I like to get them anyways. And I love you guys so much. Thank you.